Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the best gaming PCs on the planet. If you want all the benefits of building your own computer but have no clue where to start, go ahead and let our friends take care of you. Check them out at doghousesystems.com and use the code MMOREPORTER for a free 128GB solid-state drive upgrade. And by Audible, the best audiobook program in existence. If you have any kind of commute or just wish you read more, I promise you this, Audible is the solution. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOREPORTER to download a free audiobook today. Hello and welcome to episode 88 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Andrew Brown, and this week I'm joined by a great streamer on Twitch that, man, we are going to learn a lot from today. If you have wanted to get messy and down and dirty with the meta, today is your day. I'm joined by none other than Ignatius. What's going on, Ignatius?
What's up? Thanks for bringing me on, Andrew, and yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Man, today it sounds like has been a busy day for you. You were streaming. I know you've got another podcast to record after this. Are you crazy or is this just a crazy day?
I mean, I guess crazy for Hearthstone, if I'm willing to talk about the Lost Secrets of Un'Goro this many times in a row and still be excited, which I am. So yeah, I guess I'm a little crazy.
I guess we're all a little bit crazy because we're ready for the new cards, the new stuff. But
indeed, yes.
We don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. We're certainly talking about that today. But Ignatius, for anyone who's not familiar with you, can you just tell us who you are, how you got into Hearthstone, and what you do today?
Yeah, nice. So I live in Kansas City, Missouri, and was kind of born and raised here. Always played games, of course, but never played a trading card game until I found Hearthstone, which was in May of 2015. That's when I found Hearthstone. I was watching streamers on Twitch, and Hearthstone was up there in the numbers, and clicked on one and saw somebody playing Freeze Mage and thought it was really cool. And I was like, ooh, let's do that. That looks fun. So I got into Hearthstone. I felt like I was pretty good at it. And I hit Legend within like 2 months.
Not too
shabby. So I decided to start streaming it and had been streaming since, I guess, August of that year. And yeah, so now today I sort of make a full-time living working in esports, not exclusively as a streamer, but I'm also a content creator for TempoStorm. I work on their Meta Snapshot team and I write the scripts for their videos for their YouTube channel. And I work for Good Gaming as well. And they're kind of a competitive gaming reference source as well. I make videos for them. And then I do a lot of things in the Kansas City esports community, organize different events, help out with fireside gatherings, and am on episode 6 of a Kansas City sort of centered firesides podcast, which my buddy and I just started, who lives here as well. So yeah, that's a little rundown. That's a little spiel.
Very cool. I think you're doing a lot of stuff that a lot of our listeners probably would be very envious of, that you get to make a living loving these games. Is it purely Hearthstone that you cover, or is there any other esport realms that you dabble in?
Yeah, I try and keep tabs on everything because sometimes different connections lead me to different opportunities. So last November, I got flown out to a college in Boston to sort of consult for them on an esports program that they were trying to develop at their school.
Oh, cool.
And most of the students there were obsessed with like League of Legends and Overwatch, and we, you know, a little bit of Hearthstone stuff, but I try to stay familiar with everything, but most of my time and energy goes into Hearthstone and understanding Hearthstone.
Nice. I know your Twitch is primarily that, and you, you know, I think that you have developed a very unique kind of culture and community around your Twitch. Was that intentional or did you just kind of stumble into it? I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, I guess the idea was intentional, but then the way it's panned out is more attributed to the people that have made the community what it is. So before I was working in esports, I was actually a high school teacher in theology and philosophy. Yeah, for 7 years. And I always, in community development in high schools, have always like tried to set different expectations and rules to sort of lay the groundwork for the community being a place that's, I guess, a good place for all involved. And so when I got on Twitch, I looked at all these other streams and thought, you know, there's a couple of things you could put in place to make sure that the people who are interested in investing their time and energy in that community are doing so for really good reasons. So, you know, the stream is clean, like the Happy Hearthstone is. It's kind of only G content, like there's no cursing, no swearing, that kind of thing. Everybody in chat is kind to each other all the time. And then we have like a Discord server where we do a lot of esports events and community events. And it's always cordial and family friendly. And just that simple thing, just keeping it family friendly, I think has made it a really wholesome place on Twitch.
That's awesome. I feel like your stream is kind of what school should be. And I imagine what your classes were like, that it's informative. You're actually learning something, but at the same time, it's done in a fun environment. It's not just this drab, you know, if I'm watching you play Freeze Mage or something, you say, well, he, you know, I have a 25% accuracy of drawing Ice Lance at this moment, so we are going to take a 60% chance. You know,
I
don't know. It's still fun to watch, and I feel like I really do learn from watching your plays and stuff like that. So
thank you. It's cool. It's very nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, tell us today why you're happy, Ignatius. What's got your goat in a good way?
Nice. So, I mean, aside from all of the great new things that are coming to Hearthstone, my wife and I are expecting our first baby in August.
Well, congratulations. That's huge.
Thank you. It is huge. You're journeying several months ahead of me in that department right now, from what I know. Mm-hmm. And she's from Los Angeles, and I guess the reason I'm really happy is on Wednesday next week we're traveling there for my first ever baby shower.
Oh boy.
I know it's this daunting thing, but it brings me so much joy to think that there are people in our life who want to support us. Like, they're organizing this, they're getting us stuff, they're demanding that we put items on a list for them to buy for us, and it's just overwhelming. Like, I try not to take it for granted, and I'm sure I do in small ways still, but I'm just so amazingly happy that there's people in my life that are going to do that for us. So
absolutely. Yeah. It feels good to be loved. Every single one of us want that. So, and when you're going through these, I remember the same thing, you know, the baby showers or the wedding showers, or you think about what, like when you graduated high school or college, like those big events, people seem to just come around and you realize, man, I really do take advantage of a lot of the people in my life who love me way too much. And, man, so that'll be a lot of fun. Is this a specific, is there going to be any specific guy stuff? Because sometimes these things can be a little bit drab for the gentleman.
Yeah, no. So my wife's family is pretty laid back, and honestly, we're the first baby in the family. So
wow, that's a big deal.
Yeah, this is the first kid of the next generation, so nobody has these like expectations for how things should be. Like, they're going to cater Popeye's chicken, which is really
yummy.
Yeah, that's pretty laid back choice.
Sure.
And I don't think they're planning on doing any like gender-based games or anything like that. I think it's just going to be a fun family event where we celebrate the first baby of the next generation in the family. So
yeah, well, that sounds like a really good time then, and a good chance to connect with people in a different city that love you. So.
Indeed,
that's
indeed,
really good, man.
Well, so cool. How about you, Andrew? Why are you happy?
I'm happy because, for one, things are finally starting to heat up as far as the weather outside. And I tell you what, I am I'm the typical gamer who considers himself indoorsy. So I'm not always going outside for any reason. But I do love walks with my family, and especially lately when we've gotten to do that. We walked around kind of the campus corner nearby here and tonight, and just had an awesome time doing that. So I'm thankful we'll have a little bit more of that going on. And yes, I am a bit ahead. Our girl turned 8 months just this week, and man, she's starting to say syllables and stuff. I think she wants to have conversations, but she can't quite get there. Do you guys know what you're having yet? Or
no, we're gonna be fully surprised. So we'll see.
Are you? Dude, yeah. We did the same thing actually.
Oh, really?
It It's so worth it. I had no desire to do it, but my wife wanted to do so badly. I said, I'm in. And now I don't think I can do it any other way. It was so much fun. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool to hear.
Yeah, you'll have a blast with that. And I hope you're as surprised as us, because we were convinced it was a boy and it was a girl. Now I can't imagine any other way. But
that's really
cool. Obviously fun. Yeah. And likewise, man, I'm with you that it is the new expansion season for Hearthstone. I mean, it feels familiar because we've been through many of these before with Mean Streets. If you've been playing for any amount of time, there's just so much anticipation around what's going to happen. What are the new cards going to be? What's going to be the new Dr. Boom that everybody hates? What's going to be the underrated card or the Finja of the set that just comes alive later on, or whatever the case may be. So it's a really good time to be a Hearthstone fan. And I think with that, we got a lot of news to talk about here. And right off the bat, I actually want to talk about something I forgot to write in here, but have you seen Ben Brode's rap yet?
Yes, I've seen the Journey to Un'Goro rap.
So if you missed this, Reddit users demanded that Ben Brode come on, and I think it was sing a song about the new expansion, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Brode actually took them up on it and wrote an entire rap song about the new expansion that's upcoming. And Reddit exploded. It went quickly to the number one spot on Reddit. I saw somebody saying that I think that this is going to do more for that game than any of their commercials have done so far. I mean, it's just so cool to see Ben just be approachable, have some fun with a challenge like that, and really like rally the entire community around, hey, there's something really special going on with this game.
Yeah, it was really exciting. The first time I watched it, I was like, what is this supposed to be? Like, I didn't know it was going to happen. And then I realized what he had going on. And somebody in my stream chat was like, you should play it at 1.5 speed. And so I sped it up It sounded even cooler, double speeded. And now it's like the biggest thing to ever hit the Hearthstone Reddit is Ben Brode's rap. I can't believe it.
It really should be. I mean, if we're being fair. Here, nothing should ever eclipse that unless there's a part two or something. I saw there were a bunch of remixes that were going around. I haven't heard those yet, but definitely be sure to check it out. I'll have it in the show notes here for you. But the big news is what he was rapping about, which is the new expansion that's coming next month in April, which is called Journey to Un'Goro. So we talked before, there were kind of some rumors spreading around, and they were correct that the next expansion is going to be about Un'Goro, which is a zone in WoW that, from what I've read, is similar to Jurassic Park in so much as there are dinosaurs roaming around. It's sort of a little pocket of the world that goes back to old times of that. And there's this adventurous undertone going on with Elise Starseeker from the League of Explorers. So she was involved in the announcement video and seems to somewhat be kind of caught into things, I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of wondering if we're going to see something similar to, we had different versions of Ragnaros. Even Medivh has been a portrait and he was a card. I'm kind of wondering if we're going to see Elise Starseeker Journey Edition, or if we're going to see some new kind of card with her, but obviously that's 100% speculation there. What's not speculation is that we're going to have 135 cards, all the spells, minions, and then it'll release in early, or I think I saw mid-April, actually. I went ahead and got my pre-order in, and it said mid, so I was sad to see that, because I want it now, but... But that's what we're looking at right now. We'll kind of go from least to greatest in the news around it. There's a new tribe in this set called the Elementals. And it's similar to Murlocs or Pirates, where these cards can play off of each other, kind of have similar effects, or cards can kind of buff everything or give everything something. And there are a lot of old cards that are actually going to get this Elemental tribe tag. So things like Earth Elemental, Fire Elemental, Alakir, Ragnaros. There were several on that announcement video that was there anything else that stood out to you on that one?
There were a couple more, even ones I maybe wouldn't have expected. I think I saw like Baron Geddon on there, which
right.
Yeah, clearly he's like fire, but he's not like Baron Geddon the Fire Lord or anything. He's just Baron Geddon. So I don't know. And I've seen a lot of speculation that maybe like cards that are clearly, like, distinctly one element, like Arcane Giant or something, might get the tag as well. But that's, you know, that's all been speculation, too.
Yeah. We really don't know how these things are going to tie together, because whenever there's a tribe tag, that means that there's going to be some kind of card that buffs all. I mean, you think of, like, South Sea Captain for the Pirates, or Ship's Cannon for Pirates, where there's some kind of trigger whenever you play an elemental or something like that. We haven't seen anything like that, but it'll be interesting to see how those play off each other, because it seemed like there were actually quite a few of these elemental cards that are class-specific. We had Shaman, we had some Paladin. It seems like they're kind of spread all throughout, so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what comes of these. I know you've played a little bit of WoW, at least, right, Ignatius?
Yeah, I've dabbled here and there, but nothing too intense. I've never been to Un'Goro Crater, and I almost want to go now just to see it.
Yeah, I feel like you'd be able to appreciate it more, maybe, if you know the lore, know the dinosaurs that are walking around there and stuff.
Right.
I feel you on that. You want to talk to us actually about this adapt keyword that's going to be coming up too?
Yeah, for sure. So another huge kind of mechanic-based change in the set is that they're adding a new keyword called adapt. So, you know, with the Grand Tournament, we had like Joust and Discover introduced, and now we have adapt. It's going to be kind of a new mechanic, but it's kind of going to play off of Discover. So if you play a card with the adapt mechanic on it, you're going to discover three possibilities, and these are going to be three different ways that you can manipulate the card. Now in the video, the way they tease this is that they presented a card to us. It's a dinosaur looking card called the Verdant Longneck. It's a druid beast minion, and it looks kind of like a brontosaurus. Pretty cool, pretty harmless. For 5 mana with stats of 5 attack and 4 health, you play the Verdant Longneck, and it's a battle cry effect with adapt on it. Now, when you adapt, you're going to get 3 choices out of 10. So there's like a little bit of an RNG there, but kind of like Discover, it's controllable RNG. It's kind of nice. And the 10 things you might see in your 3 choices are familiar mechanics. So Taunt, Divine Shield, Wind Fury, +3 attack. You can give it that kind of arcane effect. I don't know what you call that effect where it can't be targeted by spells or hero powers.
I don't think there's a word for it, but okay. It just reads can't be targeted, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And then you can give it a death rattle, which is summon 2/1/1 plants, so give it 2 tokens when it dies. Mm-hmm. +3 health, give it +1/+1, give it stealth, or give it what they're calling poison, which is destroy any minion damaged by this minion. And I think they've actually named that effect now, because that effect was on Emperor Cobra and a few others, but it never actually had, I don't think, like a designated name. So
right, that was actually an unexpected update in this latest patch that rolled out. So it's poisonous is the keyword now for that.
Okay.
And so Patient Assassin's another one that has it, but
right.
Pit Snake, it's called Death Touch, I think, in Magic the Gathering, where just anything that it's touched by. So if you see poisonous on cards, now you know what it means. Hopefully you know with that little potion icon on there anyway.
Yeah.
But what do you think about all these adaptations? Are these valuable enough to... I mean, we saw that it comes at about a 1 mana premium with this Verdant Longneck solution. So are any of these worth it? Or would all of them be worth it?
So, you know, I think the Verdant Longneck is a nice card to tease it with, because there's a lot of variables that are hard to, like, sort of evaluate. So, for one, it's a druid class card, right?
Sure.
And it's aggressively statted. And it's a beast. So there's a whole bunch of variables there that are hard to account for this particular card. And I think that's smart on Blizzard's part.
That's fair, yeah.
It leaves the community wondering, like, you know, what... Are we going to see a card where we can see how this is broken, or are we going to see a card where we can see how this is really underwhelming?
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I think, like, there was a huge success story behind Discover. Discover was like the one new mechanic the community was like, this is great. This is positive RNG. It's fun to use. It plays off of other things. You can build out on it. Like, Kazakus is obviously just a series of Discovers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they're building out on that. Like, this is, again, there's a little bit of RNG involved, but it sort of adapts as you go. You can make a choice that's best. So you still have to, like, sort of figure out which decision is the best to make for your present situation. And creatively, and no pun intended, you will adapt your choice to the decision to the decision that you're making on the board. And so there's a good decision-making process there too, which I think is nice. For this card in particular, I don't think, you know, unless a super aggressive beast druid that curves out to turn five is a thing, I don't see the Verdant Longneck being the adapt card that's really amazing.
Sure.
Because a lot of these, you add that one mana premium on for the value you're getting, and it doesn't look that great. In fact, it's comparable to other cards and worse that are at the same mana value. But I think, you know, that's a good tease. You know, we're not too crazy about adapt. We're just kind of curious.
Yeah.
For what other cards it'll show up on.
I think there are two really interesting things, too, with this for me. One is the fact that it has Battlecry Adapt on there. I would think that, you know, kind of like you said, this is a good one to tease it out with because it's the most basic effect. You know, I remember when TGT was announced, the very first card they showed was Lowly Squire because it's a 1/2 minion that you inspire and plus one attack. Very, very simple. And I think that's what they're going for with this. But what's interesting is I would think Adapt would be a Battlecry effect primarily, but because this is tagged together with it, means that we could see Adapt be just about anything. And I'm really interested to see if there are cards like almost similar to the Mark of Yashiraj, when you know you play it to buff a minion, then you get to draw a card. I'm wondering if there are going to be like beasts that when you buff it, you get to adapt. So there's an extra incentive to really buff that card. Or I guess that's kind of similar to Dragon King Sorcerer or something like that. I'm really interested to see what they do with it because I think they're going to get creative and do some unexpected stuff. And the versatility of it, I think, really will make it shine. And I think the only other thing is like in Arena, something like this is going to be extremely valuable because it's so flexible from game to game to game for whatever you need. And because you don't know what you're going to show up against in each game, I think Adapt is going to be something you really want. I still don't know if the mana makes sense, but we've got to see some other cards to really know. Because if this is a Booty Bay Bodyguard, then that's not great. but even just the option for some of the other stuff. I think also that the summon 2/1/1 plants, I mean, that's basically a Haunted Creeper effect. I think that that's going to be super, super powerful.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a good point for Arena. I didn't think about that. And that's amazing for Arena because that kind of mechanic really, really changes up how you go about an Arena draft and an Arena game in a lot of different ways. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so. Well, let's talk about these other few cards. I know that, you know, we'll save the actual review until after the set is released like we typically do on the show. But because we've only got a few cards here, I kind of want to get a little greedy and talk about these Ignatius. Okay. I don't know about you, but
I'm down. Let's do it.
The first one we've got here is Volcano, which is a rare shaman spell. It's 5 mana and it reads, deal 15 damage split among all minions, overload 2. And when I first saw this, my initial thought was, oh my gosh, that is a cheap C'Thun. I can't believe that. This card is bananas. Why in the world would they... And then I start reading it and I say, oh, wait a minute. This isn't a C'Thun effect. This is actually a lot more similar to Elemental Destruction. So this will not hit your opponent's face. It will not hit your own face, but it will hit all minions on board. And honestly, there's a really good chance that you don't have more than 15 health on board unless you're running some insanely buff thing. So, I mean, is this card going to do much other than wipe the board, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a super control oriented card, right? Because you know it's sort of like 7 mana,
right?
And a lot of it will shake out with how Shaman settles, of course. But I do think Shaman, if it's going to be a control class, it needs more tools to stall to the later game. And this is an interesting one, and it probably makes sense too that you know Blizzard sat down and was like, okay, we're going to Ungerow Crater. There has to be a volcano somewhere in this set, right?
Like, sure, that's absolutely.
A part of the flavor. Like, if a volcano card doesn't come out, they goofed. So here's our volcano, you know, and this is what it is. So I like the flavor, and they showed the animation in the video. It was really cool, too.
It does look neat. I think that they just believe that Control Shaman hasn't quite had its day yet. And with how much Aggro Shaman has been prevalent on the ladders and stuff, I think that they still want to kind of keep that alive. So recognizing that Elemental Destruction is going to leave standard format, something like this will be really helpful for them to be able to just reset the board. And actually, it seems like this one's quite a bit better because that overload isn't going to kill you, especially since we're losing We're losing Lava Burst or Lava Shock. Mm-hmm. Is Eternal Sentinel still in?
That was Eternal Sentinel's old gods, I think. So yeah, we still have the Sentinel to reset the overload.
But I know that hasn't quite seen as much play, but who knows? Right. When it's a new standard, you never know what's going to happen.
So that's true, yeah. That's pretty a good cool. Point.
Well, talk to us about this legendary mage minion that we saw.
Okay, so is it Pyros? Is that how we say this?
I think so. I mean, Pyro is fire, and this is a fiery minion. So.
Okay, so this is Pyros, and I think Pyros is an elemental, isn't he? Isn't she? I don't know if it's a he or she. Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
It is an elemental, and it's a very interesting card. It's a card that sort of functions on a series of death rattles, so I'll try and explain it clearly. So you play it first at 2 mana, and it's a 2/2, and it reads, Death Rattle, return this to your hand as a 6/6 that costs 6 mana. So then you get to 6 mana, and you play your 6/6 Pyros, and it reads, Death Rattle, return this to your hand as a 10/10 that costs 10 mana. Yeah, so your total value is an 18/18 for 18 mana.
Makes sense.
But they're all death rattle effects, so I don't know if there's ways. Certainly, there will be ways to manipulate this to your advantage, because nobody would ever play 18/18 for 18. You know.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
But you think about almost like combining this with Baron Rivendare and Wild. you just got infinite value off of that, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be really cool. What do you think of this card? Like, what's your vision here? Are you seeing anything interesting?
Well, I think I'm feeling what you're feeling, that this is an interesting effect because it's unique, right? But it doesn't really resonate with anything that exists right now. It just seems kind of like a value card. I mean, getting three cards that expand, you know, through a lot of turns like that, that's valuable. But is this something that Mage really needs? I don't know. I mean, if you're playing a deck that doesn't have a lot of card draw, something like this would be really helpful. But Mage has plenty of card draw mechanics that I think are going to be more valuable than this. So they do tend to play it pretty safe when they initially release a set or announce a set, because we're excited. We don't care. You know?
Right, so, right, yeah.
So I think they tend to kind of get some of the things out of the way. They sort of show the flavor of things, but aren't necessarily going to be the game-breaking cards. And I think that, unfortunately, this kind of settles in there. Unless there are other effects that are really going to rally around it. I mean, is there anything that could really make this great other than two death rattles? Even that doesn't get me too excited about it.
Yeah, so one of my thoughts was, you know, Sylvanas is going into the Hall of Fame in Wild, and the big explanation on behalf of the development team before that was for design space, that Sylvanas is cramping design space.
Sure.
And it was an interesting reason, because, you know, she's hardly seeing play in the last 3 months, like hardly at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, how does a 6-mana Sylv cramp design space? Well, I try to play devil's advocate with some others, and one of the suggestions was maybe they're going to print a spell or a card which sort of reverses your death rattles into battle cries. That would cramp Sylvanas's design space.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And so then if they printed that with Mage, you would sort of play this on 2, maybe with that card, or maybe on 4, since that card has to cost money. Mm-hmm. And you get a 4/4 that comes back. I don't know. Something like that. I feel like the Sylvanas leaving thing is an indication there's more death rattle synergies coming. And maybe that's where the theory for Pyros being a legendary mage minion fits in.
Yeah. It seems like the legendary mage minions are typically weird. I think about Anomalous, or there's got to be another one, but they always seem to be these odd. Where does that card fit in this?
Ronin is very unusual. I agree.
Anyway, we'll see how that goes. And there was one other card that also kind of got leaked here, but tell us about the Megasaur here, Ignatius.
Yeah, so Gentle Megasaur. Maybe you can confirm. I'm not totally sure that this has been confirmed as a card from Blizzard. Has it, that you know of?
It's showing up on all of the main sites, and I think Disguised Toast added this on his list, so
okay.
I don't know if we've necessarily gotten the grand okay, but I feel pretty safe about talking about this one.
Okay, so Gentle Megasaur is fascinating. This is a 4-mana, 5/4 beast, and it's a neutral epic. It reads, Battle Cry, adapt your Murlocs. Now, my understanding is that what will happen is if you have Murlocs on board, you will play this, and you will get to choose one effect to apply to all of them. So you wouldn't choose a different one for each Murloc that is there.
Right.
But yeah, this is an interesting card. What's your thought on this one so far, anyway?
It reminds me of Enhanzo Meccano, okay. Where you get to make everything that's on board better, and that inherently makes it a win more card. Which, you know, if you've never heard that phrase, what that means is you kind of already have to be ahead in order for it to be really valuable, but it can sort of close out the game. In order for Gentle Megasaur to get value, you have to have, you know, two or three Murlocs on board, and then you basically get free adaptations, which could be, man, if you had them on board the turn before and they're ready to attack, you could adapt them all and add +3 attack, and you could win the game. Or you could you could give them all Death Rattles or Wind Fury, or, you know, whatever it might be. So I think that I have to take another step back. The very first thing I remember thinking about was Curator with this, because all of a sudden now Beasts and Murlocs, that makes sense that you want both of them if they're feeding off of each other like this. I think it'll be really interesting if we maybe get one other beast similar to this that either plays off Murlocs or maybe it plays off of, what was the other one? Dragons in the Curator package. Yeah, I would love to see that, where a Menagerie deck really makes sense because they can kind of breathe with one another like that. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I like the thought. I mean, I kind of resonate with everything you said, especially the Menagerie thing. Like, I think that archetype's going to be pushed a lot harder with this type of effect. My big sort of, you know, I'm drooling over an idea that might happen is, you know, you play Finja on 5 and your opponent's like, hey, Finja is scary, but not that bad. And then you get to put Murlocs on the board for free on 6. You could even play a Bluegill for 2 and pull 2 Murlocs and play Gentle Megasaur. And on turn 6, the Finja play on 6 is already really, really strong. But also combo it with the Gentle Megasaur, that could get pretty crazy.
That's, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. I'm excited.
Very cool. Well, those are all the cards we know about so far. Obviously, a very small sample size, but we heard that, I think, later on this month, March 14th, somewhere around there, they're going to start announcing some more cards. So really excited to see what Blizzard is cooking up there. And right now, you can actually pre-order the new expansion. So you can go to Blizzard's website, and for $49.99, you'll get 50 packs on day one, and you'll unlock a prehistoric card back that you can start using today to remind everyone that dinosaurs are coming to Hearthstone.
As if we'd forget.
I know, right? And these pre-order deals really are the best deals going into it. So I don't know about you, but for me, it's a really easy, hey, if I'm putting my money anywhere, it's on getting more packs right out the gates and be able to mess around with a lot of different deck types on day one.
Yep. The pre-order is good value. I always pony up for the free orders.
It's worth it. It's good.
Yep. It's a way to get excited too, because you kind of see the pack sitting there every time you open it up.
Oh. That's torture for me, seeing those 50 packs sit there and you can't open me, but I want to.
They're kind of shaking a little bit if you go to the pack opener.
I don't like that so much, but anyway, but that's all for the news for this week. We're going to get into our main topic, and today we're actually going to try out a new episode type. Yeah, so if you want to get better at Hearthstone, I think you're really going to enjoy this. I've said it before on the show that I really believe that having fun in Hearthstone is two things. It's one, not taking it so seriously that you forget that this is a game. But the other thing is that really, as you get better, I really believe that you have more fun. Being able to actually analyze, predict, make a good deck, and be able to play well just enables you to have more fun and breathe a little bit as you're playing. So today we're kind of going to take a reflect and predict approach as to what's been happening on the ladder. So we are going to talk about sort of what we've seen this past month that has been effective, sort of that meta that we talk about. So what's more than likely going to show up if you have been on the ladder a lot, things that you saw, cards that were played, decks that were played, all that kind of stuff. And then we're also going to look forward at what this next month holds, what we've already experienced a little bit of, and just kind of make some predictions. This is a really important month, as it's the last month of the year of the Kraken. So we got to wrap it up correctly. And I don't know about you, Ignatius, but as we talked about potentially doing this episode, I was a little bit hesitant only because the meta had gotten so stale for several months. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, is anything going to happen this last month that's going to be worth talking about? But I still wanted to try it. And you were gracious enough to come on and hit it with me. But actually, we've seen quite a bit, not ton monumental, but some things really shift that, honestly, as I look ahead to this next month, I'm really not totally solid about what we're going to see. So I'm excited to hear kind of what you put together here and as we talk about that. So we'll mostly be talking around standard rank play, just because, man, Wild is a beast. I don't know. I know you spent a little time there too this past month, right?
Mm-hmm. I did, yeah. For the first time, actually.
It is so hard to predict what's going to happen on there.
It is.
Any Wild meta report I look at, I'm just like, really? I don't know, man.
yeah.
But so we'll mostly be talking about standard today. But why don't you kick us off here as we think about kind of what has happened over the past month on Hearthstone ladder play?
Yeah. So I'll start like first by just kind of saying my approach to this was, you know, I don't want to just give you a recap of meta snapshots, you know,
and, right.
And they've been pretty similar from week to week. I was hoping to try and find like a, kind of a story within the meta of the last month, and especially a story that helps us sort of look to the future with some wider eyes. And so that's kind of the lens I was working with. So over the past month, we've kind of been in our settled meta. You know, an expansion comes out, everything shakes up like crazy. It starts to settle pretty quickly because of net decking and all of that. And if you've been down in the rank 5 meta at any point in the last month, you saw the tier 1 decks and almost nothing but the tier 1 decks because, you know, we're this far out from an expansion and the meta is settled. So, you know, the rehash of those decks, we saw a ton of Shaman, especially aggro, but also quite a bit of Jade, and Jade Shaman sort of been on the rise. A ton of Warrior, mostly Pirates, a little bit of Control. Your Reno decks, especially Reno Mage and Reno Warlock, a little bit of Reno Priest, and Reno decks moving back and forth between different tech cards, you know, teching for aggro, teching for control, that sort of thing. And then, you know, your trademark tier 3 decks. So Aggro Rogue sort of made a little push in the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Miracle Rogue was there. Dragon Priest with Dragonid Operative is not going away anytime soon. That card's insane. So that's been there. Yep. And then Jade Druid has been showing up here and there as well. So those are, you know, those are have been our main decks for a while. And those have been the most common decks that you would see. Mm-hmm. But the amazing thing, I think, in the last month is that with all of this being so settled, and I work on the meta snapshot team for Tempo Storm, like our conversations being so repetitive sometimes, like, guess what? Aggro Shaman's still at the top. We saw some incredible innovation in the last month with cards that have been sitting there for a long time. And it was crazy. Like, I couldn't believe that it happened. You would think that new iteration would happen in the form of like one card, like Reno, you know, right, Reno Lock right. Put in a corruption. Whoa, you know,
game changer.
Right. But no, this was like a whole new way of thinking about deck building that came out of nowhere. So we saw this in early February, and I'm calling it for now the rise of water decks. And yeah, we're speaking of Finja and his friends. So what, Andrew, can you fill us in? Like, what are water decks and why are we calling them that?
Absolutely. Well, before I do, I just want to submit potentially talking about it as the tide is rising.
Fair enough.
I'm just going to say, but yeah, this water package is 5 cards. So obviously Finja is the one that brings it all together, and he's 5 mana, 2/4 Murloc with stealth that has the text: if you attack and kill a minion, you bring 2 Murlocs that are in your deck into play. And I think from the very get-go, we thought that this was a pretty good effect. But lately, it's just it's been recognized as something that can completely change the tide of the game. So, and it's really important that you have the correct Murlocs in there. So the other four that go along with him are two Murloc War Leaders, which will buff all Murlocs with +2/+1, and then two Bluegill Warriors, which are the 2/1 with charge. So, I mean, the reason for that is basically the War Leaders will buff all your Murlocs, including the Finja that just attacked, to the point that he might not die, which is nuts. And then with the Bluegill Warriors, you're able to attack immediately for 4 damage, which is extremely powerful to, you know, clear off a minion or even just go face. So if you are in Wild, I'll throw in there that Old Merc Guy makes it into that package too, because he's bananas. But typically on Standard Ladder, you'll see those 5 cards as what's referred to as the Water Package or the Murloc Package or whatever that is.
Nice, nice. So, you know, from my vantage point, the story goes, the NA, you know, Hearthstone Championship Tour Series was approaching. It was like, I don't know, Thursday of that week, and it was happening on the weekend. And I didn't even know if I was going to watch for sure, because we just had the EU Championships the weekend before, and I watched a whole bunch of really standard cookie cutter tier one decks, you know, it out. And it was fun. And I was going to kind of keep it on the background, but, you know, I have family stuff to do and whatnot. And then the pros start releasing their deck lists, and we see like Murloc showing up all over the tournament. And the big highlights, I was like, oh God, I have to watch this. What's going on? And the big highlight was Luminosity Gaming's Frozen. He's a pro player on Luminosity's team. He made it to the Bahamas and made it to the Final Four with a Murloc Pirate Warrior, which is now dubbed Water Warrior. And it was like one of the highest win rate decks in the whole entire tournament. And it sort of awakened the community to this idea of how powerful Finja could be. Mm-hmm. I think early on in this set, like Menagerie Druid was being tossed around, and of course everybody thought Finja would go in any Finn Paladin. Sure, let's pull those out in the deck. That's cool. But now we're seeing Finja everywhere. I've seen Finja Rogues, and they're really crazy. Mm-hmm. I've seen Finja Mages. I've seen, you know, Menagerie Druid doing all sorts of cool things with Finja. I think you were saying like Puddle Priest.
Yeah. I actually played around with it's a variant of Dragon Priest that runs And of course, with a name like Puddle Priest, that's just fun. So I think actually, he's escaping me. He's the streamer that like only plays Priest.
Zed-a-lot.
Yeah. I think that he created this, but really it's so plug and play, because these 5 cards are dependent on these 5 cards. It doesn't matter what else you have in there. The fact that Finja will pull them out is great. And in the very worst case scenario, with a Bluegill Warrior, you've got a 2-cost spell, you could even call it, that deals 2 damage. That's not the worst thing in the world. And with the War Leader, you've got a 3-cost 3/3. You don't really want that. But now the upside potentially is that you just overtake the entire board with a single card. That's pretty good and pretty powerful. So I'm surprised it took us this long, but it makes sense that you can pretty much just take these 5 cards, throw them in what you're playing, and come up with some water acronym to really make it snappy and catchy.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I like Puddle Priest. I kind of want to try that just because the name is so great.
You kind of have to, right?
So I hopped back on Ladder after the HCT, and I was like, I guess we're gonna probably see some Finja. Who knows what'll happen? And I just remember I was playing a Control Warrior, I think, up against a Rogue, and I had 21 health, and it was just Finja on the board and like 4 cards in hand. You know what can happen?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And the crazy thing about the Finja turn is you develop him on 5, which means when you pull 2 minions out, you have 6 mana left to work with. So there's a lot more stuff you can do. Sure. And the Rogue killed me from 21. He finished out my Ravaging Ghoul or something, and he pulled 2 Bluegills and then played a War Leader from hand and used Shadow Steps and Cold Bloods, and I lost the game the next turn. And I was just dumbfounded. Like I get delighted when opponents beat me in new ways. And I just couldn't believe it was happening this far out from the expansion, you know, something this revolutionary. So it kind of moves into, you know, this is a reflection. I think the Finja phenomenon can teach us something about theory crafting that's super hopeful. And since this is the Happy Hearthstone, something that can keep us sort of upbeat.
You better.
Even,
And yeah. Even when the meta settles completely, right? Like, was there a more settled meta than 2.5 months out from Mean Streets?
Right.
I don't know if there's ever been since I've been playing.
Sure.
I think the community at large is guilty, myself included, of accepting metas as being settled. And I think Finch is the proof of that. And, you know, we're so quick to just say, well, you have to play this or it's done. There really can be powerful synergies sort of sitting on the back burner that have not been activated yet. I wonder if there's still some in there. I really think there could be. And the Finja's story of the last month has been a really cool testament to that.
Well, and I think Ben Brode has been the chief, you know, Pied Piper of that line of thinking, that there's something out there and you guys just have to go find it. And yeah, it's really refreshing, honestly, to kind of sit around and say, like you're saying, like, we got to remember that this is always possible. There, you know, there could be some card that just has not been discovered yet. And I think for me, it gets me really excited about, you know, watching certain streamers like Jackie Chan and stuff who are, you know, just always trying to come up with new stuff. But even seeing that something like this can come out of a tournament where somebody brings just a wacky deck that they found that works. And I mean, it really is true that, like, any of us could be the one to find the meta breaking thing, you know, yeah, or find something that's going to really catch on in a lot of different stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So how do we feel? Have we looked back? Have we reflected enough? Are we ready to move on and predict?
I feel like it's good. I do want to ask you, because I know you've got a streak of hitting legend for quite some time now. Is it 16 months?
I'm on 16, working on 17 today.
That's okay. When you get to 50, we'll really celebrate that. But I'm just playing. I got no place to stand on. But I'm sure a lot of our listeners, just like myself, are legend hopefuls and all of that. What was your experience in that grind from the different levels? I mean, I think we've talked about it before on the show that it's really rank 5 to legend that is the hardest, the grindiest, you know, most difficult. But even if you can recall back to maybe rank 10 or something like that, was there anything notable about the rise for you? I mean, what did you use? Kind of those sorts of things.
You mean from like the past month?
February
month. Yeah. So my experience of working towards legend has become much more of a mental battle than I need to play this number of games with this deck. Mm. And I really felt that last season. So I remember it was day 3 and I was rank 5, just rank 5.
right.
And my fastest to legend is day 5. I've hit legend on day 5 before.
Not bad.
That was just a really efficient climb, like 75%.
Sure.
So I was rank 5 on day 3 and I just played mid-range Jade Shaman. It was kind of new. There was a Pirates package in there. It was a little bit interesting. You could flip cards in and out and it would still be strong, which is always fun. You know, you can just go into your collection between games and be like, throw a Bloodlust in, something
sure,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, all this Finja stuff started happening and I kind of got sick of playing Shaman and I was like, I'll play some other stuff. So for 2 weeks straight, I bounced around from 5 to 3 to back up to 5.
Playing
other things. And I was just trying to enjoy it, you know. I figure I've got 3 weeks left to hit legend. I'll just enjoy it. Then I kind of got scared, you know. A week left, shoot. Anything can happen.
I got to get there. Yeah.
Right. So I went back to trusty old Jade Shaman and went down to legend in one day.
Wow.
Which was really nice. Or I think it was like the night before and then the next afternoon. So that was my experience of going down to legend. As far as what I've seen in others, so I get really inspired by certain other players. So APX Void will always throw in a big tempo mage section of his climb. And no matter what, he knows tempo mage so well, he can get top 100 legend with tempo mage, like no matter what. Wow. And it's amazing to watch. And, you know, the proverbial Fibonacci, you know, does it with Control Warrior no matter what, every single time. And he finished rank 4 legend playing just Control Warrior. And I admire these guys that they understand decks so well and all their ins and outs and all their complexities. They can do it with whatever they want. And it gives me hope, because sometimes the game can feel stale simply because we're not paying attention to the intricacies.
Hmm.
And I think their stories are testaments to that. There really is so much intricacy going on. You don't just have to play shaman, even though I did. You can spend some time working on understanding something else more. And I think that's what those 2 weeks in the middle were for me.
Sure.
Working on understanding other archetypes more, and then making sure, you know, I keep the streak going. Otherwise, you know, my stream will make fun of me, and that's not good.
you never want that when you're on stream.
Exactly.
You actually reminded me of some advice that I got this season from a friend, Ridiculous Hat, who's been on Coin Concede lately and stuff. And he was actually telling me that one of the most important things for him when he's climbing to Legend is really sticking with pretty much one deck. And I know there's several different mentalities as far as what's the best way to get there. But for me, typically when I'm climbing, I try to use what's effective. And I don't jump around from deck to deck each game. But if I've lost 3 to 5 games in a row, I kind of conclude, hey, that's not working, so I'm going to try something else. I'm going to keep trying and keep trying. And if any of our listeners are following me on Twitter, you know this has been a difficult month for me in climbing, because typically I can reach rank 5, which is a pretty good accomplishment. I can put my hat on that. But this month especially was the most difficult by far for me ever since the first month. And I still can't quite pinpoint why that is. Really, the turning point for me was because I had been really trying to do a bulk of my games in Dragon Priest, because that's one of the few classes I have left to get my golden portrait. So I really wanted to learn that deck, and I did pretty well from the 15 to 10 ranks. I was pretty quick moving through those. But once I hit rank 8, I spent over 100 games waffling between rank 8, 7, and down to 9 and back again. And it was pretty infuriating, feeling like I'm pouring all this time, this effort, this energy into this game, just trying to break through, trying to figure out what works. And the big thing for me was switching over to Pirate Warrior all of a sudden. And once I made that switch and commitment, boom, I was ranked 5 the next day. So it's really interesting hearing you talk about Jade Shaman and saying like that was like the key was figuring out what the right deck for you was, because it was different for the two of us, which one really took us there. So I think there's something to not just dictating what maybe your goals say you want to play, like the golden portrait for me, but you know, which play style can you understand better is effective right now. And can you at least have a little bit of fun with? Because I will not try to pretend like, you know, killing my opponent on turn 5 made me feel like I'm great at this game. But surely with the mid-Jade package, I know that that's kind of been the freshest thing for Shaman lately. So I can imagine that kind of play style sort of feels a little bit like, hey, this grind isn't too bad. And this deck is really, you know, interesting. Games look different from game to game and stuff like that. So I think that was probably my biggest takeaway, is just trying to focus in on the right deck a little bit better and figuring out really what that deck is for you.
Yeah, and it's great advice, because I think one of the tilt-inducing things that we do to ourselves is we focus so much on stars and rank. Like, oh my god, I was rank 8 4 days ago. What am I doing?
Right.
And then when you commit to just one deck, you start to focus on the deck itself and like how it competes against the other decks. And it really takes your mind out of that grind and into the world of the game itself. And I think it's a good mental trick you can play on yourself to focus on a deck rather than your climb. It's good advice.
I have heard that a lot, that the climb to Legend is all about mental capacity, not necessarily like being really good at the game or something like that. There's an entire dimension that's just being able to have the right mindset, not get so salty, keep things light and fun at the same time.
It's very true. It's very true.
Well, hey, as we're kind of shifting over to our predictions for this next month, I have a weird question that I want to throw at you that's here, but there's an interesting choice here for people who are trying to get to Legend. Maybe it's not a common thing for them. Would you recommend that this last month, when the meta is more settled, to go for it? Or would you say that the next month, when everyone is trying to figure out what Un'Goro and a brand new year standard, you know, 200, 300 cards have left this rotation, which one is the smarter time to really be trying to push and make that climb?
So it depends on what your strategy is. So if your goal is exclusively, I want the best moment to get to Legend, the best moment is like 2 days after a new expansion drops.
Really?
So if you look at like maybe some data graphs on when Mean Streets hit, the frequency of Pirate Warrior was insane. It was like 45% of all games were Pirate Warrior. And then after the first week, it plummeted. It dropped down to like 20, 15, and Aggro Shaman started to surge. And that was indicative of what happens when a new expansion drops. So somebody identifies a very strong deck within the new expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play that deck, you get to really stomp on anybody else who's trying to figure out something else.
Mm-hmm.
So if you queued up Pirate Warrior at the beginning of Mean Streets, you stomped on all the inefficient Reno mages, all the inefficient Reno priests. You just crushed them all with your really efficient deck.
Hmm.
And I think when Unguro hits and the Year of the Mammoth rotates, if you pay close attention to some of the good theory crafters and see that somebody has definitely grabbed onto something that's really strong, if your goal is exclusively just to hit Legend, you know, take that day off work and play 20 hours of just that deck. And just all these wins that you wouldn't normally get because of the player matchup, you're getting because of the deck matchup. So when Mean Streets hit, I was trying to theorycraft Reno Mage, and I was playing all these inefficient Reno Mages, and my win rate was like below 50% for the first week of Mean Streets. So I was just getting stomped on by Pirate Warriors.
Right.
And I was just trying to have fun trying to figure out a Reno Mage. But, you know, if I had queued Pirate Warrior for 24 hours during that first week, I think it would have been a really quick climb just because of that factor, that sort of plot factor there.
That's really, I think that you're right on. It's you have to be really vigilant about watching what other people are playing during that time and learning from their mistakes or their victories and stuff like that. You kind of have to do this really fast internal independent meta report of sorts to figure out what's working. But then you can, I hate to, it sounds sleazy, but you're kind of taking advantage of the system in a way, you know.
You are.
And really using it to leverage your goals and stuff. So it's really interesting to hear.
And that's why I qualify it so much, because in my heart, the last thing you should do when a new expansion drops is pick the aggro deck and crush people, you know?
Right.
Like, that's your time to experiment with all these cards you've never seen and look at effects and animations and get golden versions and see how cool they look.
All the sparklies.
Listen to voice acting, you know, and just enjoy the game while it's not settled. But like I said, if you really want to hit the legend, you can take advantage of people during that first week.
Don't sell your soul for a brown card back, but...
There you go.
You know, and I actually had flashbacks there to when Mean Streets was released, because no joke, I can go back on my Twitter feed and find the exact number, but I think I queued up 14 games in a row where no one was playing any Mean Street cards. And they weren't all necessarily like Face Hunter or Aggro Shaman or anything like that, and I was tilted beyond belief, because I couldn't believe so many other people weren't having fun with this game, and I really wanted for the grimy goons to work, and we're still waiting on that. But but enough about that. Tell us what you see for this next month as we're closing out the year of the Kraken.
Yeah, so, you know, our big nerf that we've been waiting for since February 2nd just landed 3 days ago.
Hallelujah.
I know. And I remember, you know, 2 days before the end of the February season, everybody in the pro scene was acting like that was the last day, because we knew the nerf would hit on the 28th and it would make things unpredictable. And you didn't want your HCT points to be contingent on an unpredictable meta.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, I don't know if any of the listeners would be unfamiliar with what the balance actually was. You want to kind of recap that really quickly? What was actually nerfed here?
Yeah, we can hit it real fast. So Spirit Claws is up a mana, so it costs 2 mana now. And the big one really was Small Time Buccaneer now has 1 health, which we talked a little bit about on the last episode. But I think the big takeaway here is that pirate packages are more contestable, especially with hero powers and just a levy of other stuff. So, and I think I have not gotten many games in, honestly, since this patch. So what's been your experience so far as if this has been effective as nerfs or not?
Yeah. So, I think, you know, the biggest day you'll see change is not day one after a nerf. Day one after a nerf, some people are still just clinging to what they know.
Sure.
And so if you queue up against an aggro shaman that opens up with Buccaneer and then plays Spirit Claws on 2, don't get depressed. Like, it's, you know, some people just cling on to it still.
Right.
I think the change will come over the next couple of weeks. My big predictions are that Zoo and Tempo Mage will come back. So
really?
Zoo and Tempo Mage were decks that lived on their ability to play powerful one drops and then just snowball from turn one.
Mm. It's true.
But you can't do better than a 3-2 Buccaneer and a 1-1 Patches with Charge. And and you can't play those cards in Warlock and Mage. I mean, not really. You don't have weapons, so there's no reason to.
I mean, unless you've got Medivh the Guardian, but that doesn't really work. So.
Yeah, that might take a while. So I think we're going to see a return of Zuin Tempo Mage. Aggro Shaman is going to have to kind of reinvent itself. I mean, the Buccaneer is just so vulnerable at one health. I think it's really going to change things. We might see it lean back on like some Doomhammer synergies and some later game burst. Water Warrior, I think, might become the new Aggro Warrior once the Buccaneer nerf really settles down. Buccaneer, you know, it just dies to everything now, and I think it's going to take a week or two before people realize how much that hurts their climb and their efficiency. And then I think Jade Shaman is the deck that really benefits from everything. So Jade Midrange Shaman has a 50-50 or better matchup against every deck in Tier 1 and Tier 2 of a meta snapshot.
Wow.
But it's 50-50s were against the hyper aggro decks. So an aggro shaman curves out nicely and kills it. A pirate warrior curves out nicely and kills it. And the nerfs hurt those decks. So I think Midrange Shaman, not the only thing that it has is a benefit from these nerfs, even with Spirit Claws kind of taking a hit. And I think we're going to see Jade Midrange just really, really snowball. And then any deck that can contest Buccaneer is going to stand a benefit. So, you know, Potion of Madness and Priest can now steal patches and trade Buccaneer. Whirlwind Effects kill them both. Pings and Mage and Druid and Rogue kill it. And if you're playing, Pirates yourself, you can kill opponents' Buccaneers with your own patches. So I do think the Buccaneer nerf is super significant. I just don't think the ripples are going to work their way through the meta for at least another week.
It'll be interesting to see how those things shift because, yeah, you're right. People tend to cling to what they know. I mean, even for me, when I've played, I think I've played 2 games so far or something. I've had an insane week. But for those 2 games, I was like, I haven't been able to watch anyone play. So I'm just going to go in and see how Buccaneer works. And sure enough, he's still really effective. And I remember queuing up against a priest who kept trying to, you know, put down just one attack minions like Northshire Clerics or something like that to get rid of it. And I always had an answer to get rid of it with a backstab and a ping or something like that. So I could just keep rolling out the 3 damage. But the truth is that there are more options now. I think the big thing that Jade Shaman wins at is Maelstrom Portal, because that's going to be able to just clear everything and build the board, which is exactly what Jade Shaman wants to do.
Exactly.
Now, do you think that Aggro Shaman was the thing that was on my mind because it was a super effective deck before Small Time Buccaneer hit? I mean, we didn't really see Pirate Warrior take off until then. But is Aggro Shaman, I know you said Doomhammer, were there other early game options that they used before Small Time Buccaneer was around?
So, you know, Trog and Golem are there, and Trog and Golem are insane.
They have to be there.
even just Totem Golem is insane. Like to be able to play a 3-4 on 2 or on 1 with coins. So, you know, those are hyper-aggressive cards. But, you know, if it's going to compete nicely with things like Tempo Mage and Zoo and Pirate Warrior without running Pirates, I think leaning back on some later burst and then kind of managing the board a little bit longer is the natural sort of fallback. Now, if Pirates don't take the hit that I think Blizzard is predicting and that I'm personally predicting, then maybe Aggro Shaman just sits pretty and keeps running Pirates. But there's also the Spirit Claws influence, and I think Spirit Claws going to 2 is significant for Aggro Shaman, not so significant for slower shamans, but for Aggro, like, if the worst thing you're doing is equipping a Spirit Claws on 1, that's not too bad. But if on turn 2 you're choosing between Spirit Claws and Totem Golem, that's really, really terrible for an aggro deck. So I do think it has to slow down, and then it has to adapt and play to a better game plan, which to me feels like bringing back Doomhammer, dropping Claws, dropping Pirates, managing the board longer, and then bursting opponent kind of in the 6-7-8 turn range.
That's really good. So it sounds like not a ton of different stuff. We'll see aggro slide back a little bit. Zoo and Tempo, man, I mean, those have been such staple deck archetypes. They really haven't been around because things have been so hyper-aggressive. So I would, there'd be a part of nostalgia that of me that would love to see those decks come back, and a side of nostalgia that would hate to see those decks come back at the same time. I'm kind of battling right now whether I want them back or not. But
yeah.
It'll definitely be interesting to see how those things shake out. Do you think that with the zoo that we would see kind of the Disco Lock package, or are we going to see like an old school, like buff, flood the board kind of thing?
I don't know. So one of the cards that kind of snuck into the set, which we never saw because Zoo disappeared, was the one that buffs the demons. And the name of it is even slipping me right now.
The Crystal Weaver, is that?
Yeah, the Crystal Weaver. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was queuing up a game and it was a warlock and it was a non-golden portrait warlock. And I was like, you know, this is the first day of the nerf. I think this is going to be Zoo. And it was. And it opened up with, you know, Voidwalker, coin Voidwalker. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, no big deal. So I kind of let a couple of more demons get on the board and then they Crystal Weavered me. And wow, I was gone. I was gone the next turn. Like, it was done. So I don't know if Zoo is gonna see some new iteration, but I think the Disco Lock package is still like super strong and is the highest up-tempo thing that Zoo has access mm-hmm. to. So it may be like a little bit of Disco synergy and maybe some Demon synergy. I don't know. That could be wishful thinking on my part, but I do think there's some tools to work with there if Zoo ends up being a deck that sees a return.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I know this is our last month with the Grand Tournament, League of Explorers, Blackrock Mountain. So there's kind of a death vigil that we need to have for the, you know, because there's just so many cards that have become, excuse the term, but standard in our play, like Thorsen or Reno, stuff like that. I mean, it's going to be really interesting. So even if there's a part of you that's listening as you're playing these games and stuff that says, man, this is too settled for me, I just want some new stuff, remember, we're not going to have this again. So there's a part of me that sort of even wants to savor getting killed on turn five by a pirate warrior. But remember that newness is coming. So
that's right.
Any other final thoughts on the reflection prediction episode for this month?
No, I think, I guess just a little bit more positivity. Like, I think the Mean Streets was such a cool expansion. I mm-hmm. think we take for granted how cool some of the cards that came out were. And like you said, you know, we've got a little bit of time left in this meta to enjoy some of our throwback favorites.
Sure.
And it's just a really great month. Like, the month leading up to expansion is a really great month to just not take the game too seriously, just enjoy playing some cards that you might not be playing for a while mm-hmm. and looking forward to new cards that are getting teased and that sort of thing. So it should be a really fun month in Hearthstone.
If nothing, go and play Toast's Genie of Zephyr's combo.
There you go.
Priest Ridiculousness. I don't know that was necessarily a hidden weapon, but it certainly was a hidden fun deck. So
right. Indeed.
Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and move over to our community section here. We actually have a question from a friend of the show, and I'm going to go ahead and read this for us. So he says, Scott here, a.k.a. Stray Dog, / the Gary Scott, / no pun intended. Lots of nomikers there. And he says, I have a question for the podcast. Reno will soon be gone. Wah, wah. Do you think they will replace him with another Highlander deck heal? If so, what would the text be? If your deck contains no duplicates, would you set a character's health to 15, set your health equal to your opponent's, double your character's health, or whatever else you guys think of? Also, really appreciate y'all accepting my friend request. Spectating helps me out a ton. Anyway, thanks for all the hard work, the time spent streaming, and everything else you contribute to the HS community. My sincerest gratitude. And he adds his battle net here, Stray Dog number 1963, and wants to share that, and we'll surely add anyone on there as well. So back to the question here, with Reno leaving, do we think we'll see another Highlander deck heal? So we really quickly brainstormed all of the Highlander. If you haven't heard the Highlander term, if you've seen the movie, there can be only one. So that's where that comes from, that it's a deck, you know, completely built of one of. So that's what Reno requires. But the other cards that they came out with in Mean Streets exclusively with that same kind of feel were Ink Master Celia, whose effect, the next spell you cast costs zero. Kazakus, obviously, custom potion, craziness, play it with Brandon, I'll kill you, or something like that. Raza the Chained sets your hero power to cost zero for the remainder of the game. And Cruel the Unshackled takes all the demons in your hand and puts them into the field. So we've seen a lot of really powerful effects for these. And I know he's asking specifically about heal here, but can we expand that a little bit, Ignatius? Is there anything else that you think would warrant this kind of effect be strong enough but not too overpowered for what we might see.
Yeah, it's a really good question from Scott from Stray Dog, because I think Blizzard in their dev Q&As has been pretty definitive that like Reno had his day and he's leaving and we're not going to replace him. You know, we're not going to reprint a pseudo Reno. That's not that's definitely not in the plans. So, but at the same time, it's such a good question because you sacrifice consistency and efficiency by putting 30 unique cards in your deck, right? And it's why it works in Warlock, because you can compensate for that a little bit with the hero power. So you sacrifice that efficiency, which means you have to have a delayed game plan, which also means you have to heal, like you have to recover and kind of kind of reset the game. I am thinking and sort of hoping that we'll get some neutral heals. But my personal prediction is that there will not be a pseudo Reno reprint. I don't think we're going to see a massive health interaction in the Highlander archetype. And that's simply because Blizzard, and I appreciate this, they really like to go for totally new ideas, not reprint versions of the old ideas. And they've kind of stood by that design philosophy really, really firmly. And at first, you know, they caught a lot of, you know, attention for it in a bad way, like please reprint Lotheb, we want Lotheb, you know, that sort of thing. But now that they've stuck to it, I kind of see the wisdom in it, which is that you get to kind of rethink the game entirely if you choose not to do like pseudo reprints. And I think that's what's going to happen with Reno. Like Highlander decks will have to rethink themselves entirely. What do you think? Anything to add on to that?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that the great thing that we've got to remember is that all these cards are just moving into Wild. Wild is really going to get better, I think, this next set rotation, because now there's not just a few way overpowered cards from Naxxramas and GVG that you go back and get wrecked by again. But now you've got this whole expansion of things, and specifically with Reno or Highlander decks, the more selection of cards you have, the better those decks are going to be. I think it's a key reason why Reno Mage, Reno Warlock are so powerful right now, is because they've got, right before a new year starts, you've got the greatest expansion of possible cards to put in your deck. So that's why Warlock has a million removal spells, because they've had three sets now to go through on that. So I think we will see Highlander decks sort of take a hit because there aren't as many options right out the gates when Un'Goro hits. But we do have some powerful effects from the four that we've got with Mean Streets. I really think that I agree with you that we're probably not going to see some kind of heal effect because they want to do different things. I'm really interested to see if they will do more of the Highlander option cards, though, because it took until Mean Streets, all the way from League of Explorers, that's a full year for them to release more of these cards. So I think they were kind of taking a chance with these, and the response has been, I think overall, really, you know, excited about this concept, because Reno Lock really was the, I guess people did tinker around with Reno Mage before, but Reno Mage really didn't get its wings until it had, well, and I guess it isn't really even run Ink Master. Kazakus really is the thing that kind of took things to the next level. So, so I think you kind of have to look at Kazakus and Reno as the standards for what a card like this needs to be in order to enable a deck archetype. If it's not healing, then what other kind of things could you do? Well, Kazakus creates a card that's extremely powerful. So I almost want to say you have something similar to that that almost creates a minion. That's a little unimaginative to have the exact same setup and just, you know, create a custom minion. But if we're doing dinosaurs, I wonder if there's some kind of, I don't know, you got Queen Crush come down and she can summon an army of dinosaurs or something, maybe kind of similar to Onyxia, except for instead of 1/1 whelps, you have maybe some adapted dinosaurs or something like that. Like that could be really powerful. I don't know what else we could really see. I think that maybe they might take a step back, though, because this was so focused with the Cabal to be a specific kind of push that it might feel a little bit wonky to do something similar in Dinosaur Land. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think, you know, if meta slows down a little bit, which it probably will because there's so many aggressive cards leaving like Finley and things like that, then it's almost like, you know, because Akas is so powerful, it's almost like you won't need that much more space to be effective in a meta that's a little bit slower.
Sure.
And of course, if they print a few more Highlander style mechanics, then you know, more power to the deck. I know there was a subtle patch note when Main Streets came out where they actually changed Reno Jackson's card text. So
his card text
used to be way more verbose. It was like, if your deck contains no more than one copy of any card, fully restore your hero. It was like super verbose. And
dictionary.
I think they were kind of paving the way. Like, I think they want the mechanic to explain itself within the card, so that way new players don't completely mess up their deck building and their effects don't even activate. But they refined it a little bit. Now it's just if your deck has no duplicates. And I think refining it indicates, like, you know, the future.
Yeah.
We want to put this on more cards, and we need a shorter card text.
I think that's a really good point. I think we will see more of these, but I wonder if it'll just be a once a year kind of thing like this. Because if you have an entire deck filled with powerful cards because there are only one of, that's not going to be fun at the end of
the day.
That's true. It's going to be way too overpowered. So you keep a few of these kind of bomb effect cards that just change the game completely. And obviously, Reno, I think, is probably the shining poster child of that, because he's so powerful. Even Kazakus necessitates that you, well, not even necessitates, but when you play Kazakus with Bran, that it becomes a game breaking sort of thing in the control versus control matchup. So, but on its own, it's a good card, very good card. So,
yeah. And thanks, Stray Dog, for the question. It's a great question.
Yeah,
I will add you on Battle.net, friend.
Oh,
so if you want to spectate, add me up.
How
and
about
feel
that?
Free to hop in.
I know he's jumping into my games quite a bit. So now you should watch Ignatius Stray Dog. He'll show you the way for sure. So, well, cool. iTunes reviews, none this week. And I think I've neglected to say this, but I'll go ahead and let the elephant out of the closet here, that I understand that you didn't go and run out the gates and just leave an iTunes review when you didn't even know who Andrew Brown was. But at this point, now you're kind of getting a feel for it. So feel free to go leave some feedback. It really helps out the show, and it's the cheapest, easiest, freest way to support us. So go ahead and search for Happy Hearthstone in iTunes. Leave a review. Let us know what you think. Or in whatever device you use. We're now on Google Play, which is awesome. So you can find us on there, Stitcher, or however you listen to the show. All right, Ignatius, we got a card of the week section coming up, and when we first talked about this, man, you told me how excited you were about this defining moment in your esports career. Is that
right?
Isn't that right?
That's about right. That's pretty close to verbatim right there.
Well, why don't you go ahead and lead us into it, man?
Okay, so card of the week. Should I say the card first?
You gotta sing, man. You know how this works.
So before I got into teaching and all of that, I was a musician, mainly a piano player. Yeah,
okay.
But I played a lot of guitar, and I love any excuse to bring out an instrument and actually have to play it a little bit. So I'm gonna grab my guitar here.
Oh man. This is one of the premium co-hosts that we have on the show that went above and beyond the Call of Duty.
I got to earn my spot.
Yeah,
you know,
I like it, man.
In the Happy Hearthstone famedom.
Awesome.
Okay, so I just wrote, like, you know, it's just three real quick chords. Is that coming through?
I can hear it, yep.
You can hear the guitar. Okay.
Swoon
us. Okay, cool. And then just a little four-line lick here. It's the Happy Hearthstone Card of the Week, as we journey to Un'Goro. What do we see? It's Amara, the Warden of hope and dreams. She will set your heroes' health to 40. The end.
Brilliant. Well done. My goodness. Well, So you've got to bring us in real quickly on what this card is, because okay. If you haven't heard about this, they just heard that this card, which is for real, it's sets for real. Your hero's health to 40. This is
right.
This is nuts. And, so
tell and
us all
she's
about
a
this.
5 mana 8/8. So now, you know, I didn't know if I was going to have time to put a song together and have, you know, and sing it and all that stuff. But then when I realized I was picking a Mara, like, this card deserves a song-like entrance.
So much so.
Yeah, so one of the mechanics that we did not mention in our news section about Un'Goro, we sort of put it off to this moment, is they're adding legendary spells to the game. And
whoa.
These, yeah, big deal. These legendary spells are called quests. And the way they're going to work is every class is going to get a 1-mana legendary spell. If you've decided to put it in your deck, you will have it at the start of the game, and it will be one of your cards, and you can play it on turn one. Mm-hmm. The only one we know about is the priest one. It's called Awaken the Makers, and it reads, quest, summon 7 Deathrattle minions, reward, Amara, Warden of Hope. So when you complete this quest, I think you will be given Amara, and that will pretty much end the game, I think. She's a 5-mana 8/8 legendary minion that also has taunt. And if that wasn't enough, she reads Battle Cry, set your hero's health to 40.
If you got upset when Reno was played against you, giddy up, because you're about to... I mean, 40, holy cow.
I know.
So really the big question is, how hard is it to summon 7 Deathrattle minions in a game as a priest?
It's, I mean, if you're really asking, right now, it would be impossible right. in our present meta. Like, meta will have to slow down. Mostly because, like, the spell itself is going to take up a card in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be one of the cards in your opening hand, so your opening hand is naturally not as good. And you have to play it for 1 mana. So it's what you have to do with your first turn, which so you're already behind, you know. So it fits in a control deck, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the payout is probably the most powerful card we've ever seen, I think. I mean, is that fair? You think that's fair?
Oh, absolutely. And they did say that these quests are going to enable some of the most powerful effects that we've seen yet. I mean, on its own, Amara is an absolutely broken card. But this this requirement that you have to play 7 Deathrattle minions, I mean, you think about that. If you're able to curve out and play some Deathrattle card every turn, I mean, I'm trying to even think what you... Loot Hoarder into Harvest Golem into... What's a 4-mana? You don't have Piloted Shredder anymore. Although I did think immediately, okay, there's so many powerful Deathrattle effects in GVG and Naxxramas. Like, wild, this card might really be busted in there.
Right, right. And they'll probably print more for the new set as well. So
yeah. I don't know. If you summon 7 of them, what turn is that? I guess 9 that you're actually able to play Amara for the first time, which against an aggro deck, you're probably dead unless you had either Infested Tauren or Sludge Belcher in Wild to really like slow things down. You want those taunt effects to really, you know, have something on board that forces those aggro people to stop. But if it's a control deck... I didn't even think about this until now. But if you're going up against a control warrior or something, and you get all of this done, you play Amara, I set my health to 40, and then your opponent plays Alexstrasza the next turn.
I know.
Oh.
The ultimate Amara counter.
Wind out of your sails, because...
That's when you brewmaster your Amara back and
play
it
again.
There you
go. And actually, that could totally be viable, I guess. I think that you're right that we do need to see some other Deathrattle effects. I mean, I kind of wondered if the adapt thing with those Deathrattles, if those will count. The big thing I thought is, man, we're losing Museum Curator with this set, which a Deathrattle priest would really want, you know.
Mm.
But I actually heard you talking. You were a guest on the Hearth Coach episode most recently. And I was trying to listen to you guys just to make sure we didn't hit too much of the same stuff. But I thought you brought up a great point that we have to say that in an Azoth deck, which would want a lot of Deathrattle minions, you're probably going to summon a bunch of Deathrattle minions that you didn't want because they're really early game.
Right.
So I I think this is such a powerful effect, but we have to see what the cards are going to be in Un'Goro, because if there aren't some really like stellar Death Rattle cards in there, I don't know if this is going to be something that you see a lot of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I think like Reno Priest is the Reno deck that will continue to persist. Like so Reno Lock, like without Reno Jackson, can Reno Lock really do what it does? Like, can it really tap its life away for card draw? And the ironic thing about Reno Priest is that when you play Raza and Justicar, you don't even need Reno anymore. You know, in a lot of games right now, like a lot of Reno Priest games I've played, Reno just sits there and I'm like, well, I'm still at 30 health. I guess I'll just play him so he can do stuff on the board.
Sure.
You know, so maybe Amara fits into a really slow Reno Nazoth Priest. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work on getting Amara done really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It just uses her as another way to just completely, you know, stomp on your opponent in later turns.
Sure.
Or something like that. And then, you know, the issue is just the aggro issue and whether or not it's viable to pull it off consistently in a stable meta.
Yeah.
But either way, like, just staring at these two cards, my mind is just this vacuum. Like, that's when they've done something great with cards,
sure,
you know,
sure.
When you just can't stop thinking about it. So I'm super excited about Amara.
I'm guessing that you're also a little bit starstruck just because of this idea of Quest, too. I mean, we're going to see 8 more of these. And
yeah,
if this is just one of them, I mean, I can't even imagine what these other cards are going to be, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm kind of doubtful that every single one of them is going to give you a card like this. There are probably going to be some other rewards that you'll see.
Right.
And I'm not a very good theory crafter, so I have a harder time coming up with what these could be. But it'll be really interesting to see if, you know, Control Warrior gets something like, you know, make it to 50 armor and you win the game. Maybe you can enable Shield Slam on your opponent's face when you do that. or, you know, Mage has to cast so many spells or something like that. Something really interesting is that when you play the Quest card, it shows up sort of in the secret slot above your hero portrait. And your opponent can also see that you've played it as well. So they're actually keeping track of what you've done. So you can't... What's interesting about Amara specifically is that if you do fulfill the quest, your opponent then knows that you have her. So they sort of have, I don't know, do you hold on to Amara after you earn her, knowing that your opponent is going to...
I mean, if you're a control deck and you don't have to play her, like if you have 30 health...
Yeah, I guess you're fine.
Let your opponent feel sad about every advance they make on your face. You know?
You both know it's not going to work, yeah.
Right.
It's only going to get you closer.
Yes.
But it'll be really exciting. I'm psyched to see what these other quests are, and I think it's a really fun mechanic to add to the game.
I'm with you on that for sure.
Awesome. Well, we're going to head and close out a great show here. Hey, just to let you guys know, we at Happy Hearthstone are a proud part of the MMO Reporter Network, which is a collaboration of several different podcasts that are all on mission to provide fun and entertaining takes on your favorite games. So especially if you play any kind of MMOs like WoW, LOTRO, Guild Wars, go ahead and go to mmoreporter.com and check out some of the other great podcasts over there. Chris and the team do an amazing job keeping everyone up to date on all the MMO things. And if you'd like to support our show financially, help us grow, help us get better, go to patreon.com/mmoreporter. You can check out some of the great rewards we have over there to help us increase and get better at what we do here. And as always, we'd love to hear what you thought of the show, what you'd like to see added to the show for future episodes. Be sure to join us on the Google Plus Happy Hearthstone community. You can search for Happy Hearthstone or check out the link in our show notes. You can follow me on Twitter at AndrewIsLiving or follow the show at TheHappyHS. You can also email us with any questions you have, like the Gary Scott, at TheHappyHearthstone@gmail.com. Also, we're always looking for great co-hosts. Ignatius reached out to me, and it was just an easy decision to get him on the show. So if you're listening and you think, man, I'd love to cut my teeth on some podcasting and bring a deck to a deck battle episode or talk about some strategy or anything like that, hit me up and let's figure out what we can do. We've also got a Discord channel and we've got the link to that in our show notes. You can come and talk Hearthstone stuff, share deck lists, whatever you want to do. And also just a reminder, every single Monday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Central, I'll be playing Hearthstone over at our Twitch, which is twitch.tv/MMOReporter. As we're jumping into this new month, I guess I'm going to be puddle priesting because it's time to really see what the Finja package can do. And I do have to get that Golden Priest at some point. So if I can do it with Murlocs, all the more power, you know, something like that. And Ignatius, for all of our friends who want to go and follow you, give us everything we need to do that.
Nice. So I stream 6 days a week. 6 days a week. I'm running out of words.
we're long toothed in the show now.
6 days a week at twitch.tv/IgnatiusHS. I usually stream like during the workday, like between 10 a.m. 2 p.m. Central, and then run a lot of community oriented events out of that stream. So we do community followers tournaments and do alternative game tournaments and things like that. We even have a D&D group on our Discord. So
dang, that's for real.
It is. So if becoming a part of a fun and upbeat and positive, I think awesome community is something you're interested in, hop on by in Twitch and say hi and hang out for a bit. I'm also on Twitter at IgnatiusHS. And then, as I mentioned early on in the show, a buddy of mine in the Kansas City area and I have started a podcast. He's actually an innkeeper, Sam Benson. He's an innkeeper for Blizzard their Firesides program. So he runs really awesome fireside gatherings at the local brewery here in Kansas City. He and I have started a Hearthstone podcast where we talk about Hearthstone stuff every week, and then we bring on special guests from the Kansas City esports community to talk about esports and gaming in general. And it's pretty cool. So come check us out. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and all your favorite podcast source. And lastly, some plugs for the content teams that I work for. And feel free to check out if you're looking for guides and analysis on Hearthstone things. Tempo Storm's YouTube channel is a really great source for good content. And if you've never heard of Good Gaming, they are publishing some awesome content for competitive players in Hearthstone. Check out goodgaming.com.
What's the latest content thing that you worked on and published, just so that we can get an idea?
Yeah, so on Tempo Storm, we've been working for a long time on our first mini documentary.
Whoa.
Yeah, so we're going to be surveying the Miracle Rogue archetype throughout all of history. It's going to be this
Interesting.
Yeah, this epic video on how Miracle Rogue started, how it endured so many nerfs and so many expansions, and how it surged back again in the Mean Streets set as that deck that won't go away no matter how much Blizzard nerfs it. I mean, half of the original Miracle Rogue core has been nearly nerfed into the ground, and the deck came back as a tier one deck this season. So that's going to be something on Tempo Storm. And then tomorrow I'm publishing on Good Gaming a mid-range Jade Shaman deck guide. It'll be a video, about 5 minutes, help you with your mid-range Jade Shaman climb this season if that's what you're going to be doing.
Very nice. Well, we'll be sure to check all of that out. I mean, like I said, I get better just from watching and hearing what you're thinking as you're playing. So definitely be sure to go check them out on Twitch. And I haven't looked at it as many. I go to Tempo Storm all the time. I've even checked out Good Gaming. But I need to pay more attention to who's authoring these things, because if it's your stuff, I got to pay even more careful attention. Well, Ignatius, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. It was awesome having you. I feel like I learned a lot about the meta and everything, and thanks for trying out a brand new episode. It was great having you, man.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for bringing me on, and thanks for keeping Happy Hearthstone going. This is a joyful, bright light in the Hearthstone community, and I absolutely love it. So thanks for doing the work to keep it going.
Absolutely. Keeping the torch burning bright. And the truth is that every single one of us in the Happy Hearthstone community are doing that by listening, by hanging out on our social media, coming to hang out on Twitch, whatever that is. You're part of Happy Hearthstone if you're listening to this, and I appreciate you. So thank you for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.